available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And because I have talked in a different modulation today, Ryan actually just adjusted my audio levels while I was talking.
Actually, I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions. Actually, was muting the computer Dave's using because he likes to pull up, I don't know what kind of videos he's pulling up, but I don't want it to play on the podcast, so I wasn't changing
Look,
your volume.
Do I have avant-garde porn interests? Yes. But is that something to judge me with on this show? No. God, no.
You can watch whatever you want. I just don't want it bleeding into the show itself, so I have to mute the computer that you're on. That's all I was doing.
It's really weird of me to watch porn while we're sitting here in the same room, but I guess I just, you know, I can't
That's
help
what
it.
Our relationship
It's an addiction.
Like.
What are you supposed to do?
That's our relationship, folks. All right. Well, we have a big show for you today. Actually, a bunch of news and notes. Not as many games to recap. Five games to recap. Four to preview, so we got four teams on buys this week. But if you want to send us an email, you want to send us a voicemail, you want to send us a text, all that stuff, our email address is pac12podcast@gmail.com. Or if you'd rather call or text us, it's 424-532-0678. I think we got a couple of texts. We definitely have a voicemail. And if you want to tweet at us, it's at pac12podcast. The website is pac12podcast.com. You can go over to Reddit, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. But the main thing, what we love, and this has been our giveaway for the last couple of months, you want to get some underwear, $100 gift card to Jockey, you can do that. Just leave us a 5-star review, and the best one each week, we're going to send you $100 to go buy all the apparel from Jockey you want. It's cool, Dave. You're watching Pac-12 Network, which seems like most of the games that we're watching are on Pac-12 Network now. Little Jockey logo down the bottom of the screen. It's kind of cool to see.
It's like, great.
Hey, they work with us.
Yeah, they're part of our team. We're part of their team. And together, we support this terrible league.
It's a bad league.
All right, so we've got five new reviews. First one from The Tiger, 1234. This is a 5-star review. It is definitely a podcast. I actually know Dave Woods from college. We reconnected while we were groomsmen of our mutual friend a few weekends ago. When Dave told me he hosted a podcast, I thought that makes sense. He always had a face made for radio. But there you go.
I feel like there's a couple old jokes in this one.
There's
like,
some roast,
it's a podcast.
There's some roast jokes in here. Dave was one of the smartest people I met in college. As an adult, I realized that just meant I hung out with a bunch of idiots back then. Can I get a rim shot? There we go. There should be another joke here, but in honor of the ambition, or rather total lack thereof, of the hosts, I'll just let this last point peter out. All kidding aside, this podcast is good. The hosts don't sugarcoat. Some pods are terrified of saying anything negative about players and teams because they may lose, quote, access. Dave and Ryan don't seem too worried about losing, quote, access. These guys go hard at all of the Pac-12 teams. They're smart, irreverent, and have fun takes. Is there a lot of esoteria and navel-gazing? Absolutely. Is it too long? Probably. But if you're looking for Pac-12 football talk from semi-normal guys, this is the pod for you. Thank you, either Mark or Derek.
One of your friends there. Nice.
Yeah. This is from Brew Clinton, 5-star review. I listened to two episodes. They were ferocious.
Hold on.
They were ferocious.
There you go.
Well, that's a contender.
Yeah. This is from Gil Mober. 5 stars. 5 stars in our hearts. 1 star for game picks. This review has line breaks. Gift card? This podcast strives for what the Pac-12 really desires when compared to other sports shows. Parody.
Nice.
Love it.
Our picks are parody. I do like the line breaks in there.
That's really nice. Yeah. This is from Not Larry Scott, 5-star review. The perfect podcast for the Pac-12. Don't be tricked by the use of the word, quote, perfect. This podcast is full of mediocrity. Ryan does a decent job of trying to talk about football, but David is a juggernaut of obscure references and will take the show wherever he wants. I wish I could give some great analogies about how both the podcast and Conference of Champions are equally awful, but to be honest, it's all white noise to me, and I retain absolutely nothing from either. I've watched the Pac-12 for years and will keep turning it on each weekend and will do the same for this pod. Maybe I don't have enough self-respect to move on and see what else is out there. Maybe someday the Pac-12 will stop beating itself up. Maybe we can have a team that can actually compete for a championship, or maybe this podcast will actually have good sports talk. I'm not sure about any of those, but to be honest, I've come to enjoy watching bad football, so let's have David crank up his pessimism as we keep watching this train wreck of a conference keep going.
Nice.
Love it.
I like that.
And the last one from Bree1027. They give away underwear for 5-star reviews. I have never listened to the Podcast of Champions. I never intend to listen to the Podcast of Champions. Frankly, I don't like football. My boyfriend says you give away jockey underwear for the best 5-star review. I like jockey underwear. He says you read the reviews on the show, which will have zero impact on my life because, as stated above, I will never listen to the show. He said he'd listen to the show and let me know if I won. He also gave me a few notes about the podcast. He wanted me to know that Dave is the laziest podcast host he's ever listened to, the love child of Howard Stern and a panda unwilling to have sex. Unwilling to have sex for the survival of its species. He said hearing Ryan moan and drone about spring practice reports or whatever ASU assistant got a slap on the wrist is more boring than watching paint dry on a physics lecturer's wall at the heat death of the universe. He said that the only reason he listens to the show is the inevitable train wreck it devolves into on a weekly basis, like watching the 1814 White House set ablaze or listening to a 2019 Joe Biden primary speech. Does any of this matter? No. They give away underwear for 5-star reviews. I like underwear.
That's really good, too.
That's a winner.
You think so?
That's the winner. Yeah.
Okay.
Bree 1027, come on down.
Yeah. And or, please do not listen to the show.
Yeah.
We're actually getting record listeners, which is cool, but not Bree.
No. Bree is not one of them. But
will Bree buy underwear for her boyfriend or for herself?
Great question.
A little both.
Great question.
Yeah.
And the Tiger 1234 is my buddy Mark.
Oh.
Not my buddy Derek. I just got a text message confirming such.
Nice.
There you go. Well, you're not a winner, Mark.
There you go, Mark. I'm sorry you felt that he was smart at some point.
Rough one for you.
All right. Great stuff here. I want to go over our survival pool real quick. 24 entered week 5. Half are gone. 12 are still alive. So please submit your submission. Submit your submissions. Is that right?
I love it.
Submit your picks.
I love it. Pick your picks. Submit your submissions.
Yeah. Pick your submission. Picks. Submissions. Go in there. So we had, so make sure you just do it if you're one of the 12 that's left. Please don't send them in because it just takes Matthew more time to go through it all. So week 5 winners, 11 people picked USC. 1 picked Arizona State. So of the 12 winners, of the losers, we had Cal, UCLA, and Oregon pretty much split up evenly. So, all those teams lost.
Wow.
Someone picked Cal. Nice. Oregon, you think, No. Mm-hmm. They're not so good. Okay, so thank you for everyone that worked in the survival pool. A few notes we have here. Did you see the deadline was on Monday for Nick Rolovich? So, if he wanted to get the vaccine and it'd be 2 weeks fully vaccinated, he could get Johnson & Johnson on Monday, and by the October 18th deadline or whatever, if he's not vaccinated by then or have, then he can no longer work for the university. According to John Wilner, it looks like there's a review panel, so you had to submit your exemption, which is, was it medical or, I forget what the other exemption was, whatever. Like there'd be some exemption or religious, I believe. It can't be like a personal one. And there's a board. It's a blind one. It's not like, okay, here's a football coach. We'll give him an exemption. Apparently they take the name off of it. And there's like a committee at the university that looks at all these, objections or whatever, and then make their determination. But we could very well see the end of the Nick Rolovich era at Washington State if he's decided not to get the jab on Monday. Do you like the jab when people say that? You hate that?
No, I love it.
Okay.
Because we're taking just like a very like quick thing that like the British use, and we're just using it.
I was in London for a couple of days like this summer. Yeah, yeah. They said the jab a lot, so it sort of stuck in my head.
Well, it's so much better than like, I'm going to get the vaccine. No, I'm going to get a jab.
So we should know in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Yeah, happy trails, buddy.
What do you think is going to happen? So my guess is
he's not going to get it because conspiracy brain won, obviously.
Yeah.
He's not going to get it, and he's going to get fired. And that's great. Good for Washington State. They get to try again.
All right. Let's see. I was talking about some of the Pac-12 teams. we were like, hey, is the Pac-12 bad? We think the Pac-12 is bad.
You know what I think it is? It's like every other year with the Pac-12. I think it's worse than it usually is, but I think just everyone's the same. Like, we're talking about this. Our number one team and our number 12 team, if they like played tomorrow, I would not be shocked if 12 beat one.
Yeah.
Just
our top two teams lost this week in the power rankings.
The league is just, it's what it always is.
But then, like, so
cannibalism.
So you lose. So, like, oh, maybe Purdue's pretty good, you know? It's like, because Oregon State's 4-1, they've won their last four games. No, Purdue's not, you know,
Purdue's not good.
They lost to Minnesota, who lost to Bowling Green.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay. Kansas State, you know, hey, Stanford got smoked by
them. Is Kansas State good?
No, they lost their last two games. Fresno State, we thought, hey, man, they could be legit.
And did they beat the team they played last weekend?
Hawaii. No.
No, they didn't.
So we're just seeing a lot of this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll get into that more. There's been some debate. I don't know why. Like, John Wilner's, like, putting out the path to the playoff. And there's been some national podcasts that talk like, yeah, the Pac-12's still alive. Like, I don't even think about that anymore. Like, I just think that's completely gone.
Oregon fans, I guess earmuffs. Nobody's winning out the rest of the way.
No. Every game's almost a coin flip.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you've got a 60% chance of winning your remaining whatever seven games. Great, you're going to lose two of them at least. No, it's going to be the class. I think this is the perfect year to finally test out that theory of everyone finishing 5-4 or 4-5.
Yeah, that would be great. I think there's two pretty terrible teams, and then everyone else is kind of mediocre. Bad news, Cal nose guard Stanley McKenzie, he's out for the season. So he missed. I think he was hurt in the Washington game and then didn't play in the Washington State game, but apparently he's out now. So Cal's defense could use some help, and that doesn't help.
No, that doesn't help.
Speedy recovery to Stanley McKenzie, though. We forgot to mention this last week because we've mentioned this before that we are morons, but you guys are all listening to us anyway. And so you could like make fun of us for being stupid. We're stupid. We'll admit that. Arizona had tryouts for a walk-ons in the not like in fall camp, like in the middle of the season. Like basically like, please come help us. We need help. I thought that was a great story.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So good. So good. And like you gotta figure like there's some random students who can outplay like a few of those like Arizona wideouts, you know? There's probably a few.
I would think.
Maybe a quarterback. Who knows?
I think they found their quarterback.
Yeah.
We'll see.
They found the best one they have on the roster right now, but I'm just saying there might be a walk-on who's pretty good.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a good one. We missed it last week because, like we said, we're dumb. The NCAA announced Tuesday it has approved a one-year waiver of signing an initial counter limits in football that will help coaches deal with roster issues related to the transfer portal. So basically, you can sign 32 instead of 25 as long as you've had people leave in the portal. So, you know, if you're Stanford and you had 50 guys leaving the portal, you can still only sign 7, but you can replace the guys that you had lost. So up to 7. I think they have to sign it. It might be signed today or something, but there was talk about this before. So I like this. Like, I didn't like that you could transfer out but can't bring more guys in. And transfers count against that 25 limit. So I think this is a good thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think it was a necessary thing.
Here's some more Arizona news. Preview. So Arizona's going to do a wideout. You know, working on I think it's a 16-game losing streak. Hadn't won a game in two calendar years. They're going to have a wideout.
Great.
And our friend Michael Lev, love him. He tweeted out, and this is a little bit breaking news, that Arizona, now it's the wideout, they will wear their Navy jerseys for the wideout. He said, not kidding. So that makes a lot of sense, right?
Well, why are they doing a whiteout then? Why don't you do like a redout or something?
I don't know.
Because UCLA is going to be wearing white for that game.
So it's like, I feel like they have the support of the fans.
Odd choice.
It's sort of like the Chargers-Raiders game at SoFi the other night, which got delayed by lightning here in Los Angeles. That was so weird.
I probably would have gone with a redout. Just me, personally.
Well, the Navy jerseys, maybe they're the Navy out.
Well, then you're like kind of playing it. UCLA's got a blue in there.
Oh, that's true.
And it's not the same blue, but it's a blue. So why not just go with red?
Do the red out.
Because Arizona, you know, when I think of Arizona, I think more red than anything.
Yeah. No, I like the red out. That would be good. But yeah, they're going to do a white out and wear Navy jerseys, so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Did you ever watch LA Story?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, with Steve Martin and stuff. I felt like that's what happened to Los Angeles on Monday, because all of a sudden you look outside and it's like thunder, lightning pouring. Like, we haven't had rain in quite a while.
Yeah.
Thunder, lightning pouring. And I'm like, I didn't hear about anything about this.
No.
And it's sort of like the pre-recorded weather thing. It's like sunny and 70, just throw it up there. And the guy goes on, you know, he goes on vacation or something, and Woody Harrelson's like, I suck my boat because you watched your, you know, forecast. I felt like that was happening. I was like, did anyone know there was going to be like thunder and lightning like crazy out there? Some cool pictures, but yeah, then, you know, this is very LA. You got to lay the Monday Night Football game that's played indoors.
Right.
Because of lightning.
Yeah.
Because I guess the sides are open. I don't know. I haven't been there yet, but it looks pretty cool. Okay. So that's sort of our newsy recap of what's going on here in Pac-12 football land. We have to do our picks. We'll do our picks a little bit later. We got to do our game recaps and reveal our power rankings for this week. So let's do our
Pac-12 roundup.
Okay. So first up, our number 12 team, that hasn't changed.
Arizona Wildcats.
They're on a bye. So we don't have to talk about them. But but they got the whiteout coming up. We already talked about Arizona quite a bit. Our number 11 team, still in that spot.
Colorado Buffalo.
They were hosting our number 6 team.
USC Trojans.
Yeah. Yeah, they sure were. Colorado continues to be terrible. USC's defense actually was awful in this game, as far as I'm concerned, because they allowed Colorado to throw for over 100 yards. Brendan Lewis finished with 162 yards on 17 attempts. That's almost 10 yards per attempt. That is awful for USC's defense. They should feel terrible about that.
Most points they've scored all season.
Yeah.
14.
Yes. Well, except for the Northern Colorado game. But yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Most points they've scored against an FBS opponent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Colorado still looks terrible. USC's offense really got going in this one. I think is this the best they've run the ball in a conference game in the last 2 years, probably?
It's up there. Yeah. They ran the ball extremely well.
Yeah. And Keaton Slovis, I think, looked much better than he did the previous week. So you got to like seeing that if you're a USC fan. You know, he was throwing so well back there. I just thought it was Jackson Dart back in there. But no.
He came to practice yesterday.
No, it was the second best quarterback on the roster.
Yeah.
But yeah, Colorado looks terrible, continues to look terrible, even against the bad USC defense that's poorly coached and awful. They still only scored 14 points. After the game, Carl Durrell was walking off the field or jogging off the field, and he pushed some reporter's camera, which, yeah. Okay, there were a lot of people talking about like assault or whatever, and I'm like, no, it's not assault. It's just a sign that you're way in over your head and you're bad at your job and you should probably be fired.
Yeah.
That's it. But I think continuing, I mean, it's just there's not a whole lot to be hopeful for as a Colorado fan right now, because you are just in year two. Durrell does have – I was looking at his contract deals, details. I think it's fully guaranteed, his contract.
Whoa.
I think they from what I was reading, the reports of it at the time
– those always work out well.
Yeah. They'd have to pay him a substantial amount of money to get – gone at this point. So if I'm Colorado's administration, I start looking for cause. You know, oh, he pushed a cameraman, that's cause. The contract details didn't look good to me. Now maybe I'm reading it wrong, so hopefully there's some better news to be had there, but Colorado might be stuck with this for a while, which means I think they're going to need to make some obvious coordinator change at the end of the year. Get Durrell's hands off this offense, because again, it looks very much like everything I've ever seen from Carl Durrell, but it's bad. USC, they looked fine. You know, they did what they should have done against Colorado.
Yeah, it's this one we got right as far as picks goes. Yeah, our picks, by the way, are pretty bad still. Dave had a 3-2 record. I had a 2-3 record. But this is one we nailed. It just didn't look like Colorado could score. Their biggest, you know, scoring 14 points, their biggest pass play of the season. You know, one of those touchdowns was on a short field. But, you know, Colorado, it doesn't look like a very good team. I think we know a couple of things. We know Arizona and Colorado aren't good, and the rest we're not sure about. I mean, everything else is sort of like up in the air.
If I had to Honestly, if I had to pick the Colorado-Arizona game on a neutral field, I would take Arizona. So that should probably inform our power rankings. It's just Arizona's been so inept the entire season. Yeah. They lost to Northern Arizona. But Arizona, at least I feel at times they have a pulse. Colorado doesn't look like they have a pulse. Like, that offense looks completely hopeless, and the players don't look like they're engaged with it either. Like, it's not like there's just not a lot there, and you could see this defense, I mean, already in this game, but this defense, which I actually think is pretty quality, like, I don't think it's a bad Colorado defense.
No.
But I think they're already getting overwhelmed by the responsibility on them, because they not only have to, you know, do a good enough job, they have to, like, go way over above and beyond, because the offense is so bad at staying on the field and scoring points, but even just staying on the field.
It's hard to keep that level. And they got Mustafa Johnson back, and USC still ran all over him. I feel for him, because, like, I feel like sometimes on this podcast I'm the Colorado defense and Dave's like the Colorado offense, and I just have to carry it for all those times. And so, like, week after week, just have to keep going, you know? So
yep.
But I've been doing it. Colorado's defense, I don't know if they're going to have the longevity. I mean, I've been doing it for years, so it's just, I guess I'm sort of used to it.
I would say in a lot of ways, I am the Carl Durrell of this podcast.
You actually nailed it. I think someone tweeted us, oh my God, like, Dave nailed it. Like, the Carl Durrell offense is what's going to, he comes in and puts his, like, fingerprints all over the offense.
The more he smears his fingertips over the offense, the worse it gets. He's the opposite of King Midas. Everything he touches turns to shit.
Well stated. Okay, let's move on. We got our number 10 team.
California Golden Bears.
And they were taking on our now number 9 team.
Washington State Cougars.
Yeah, no, yeah, they need the real one this time.
They were ferocious.
Yeah, so here's the thing. We have three very bad teams in the league this year, I think. I think Cal's one of them. The more I'm thinking about it, the more they are one of them.
Yeah.
Only two of them are completely unwatchable, and that's Colorado and Cal. I think Arizona is actually watchable in a certain way. Cal, though, is the most unwatchable. They're less watchable than Colorado. Because Colorado, it's like, oh, holy shit, are they gonna get a yard? Are they gonna do it? And, like, doing the Colorado yardage watch is kind of fun. Like, they went over 100 passing yards. This is great. Cal is not fun. Nothing about this is fun. Their defense isn't that good anymore, and their offense is terrible. Once again, terrible. Chase Garbers does not look like the MVP Chase Garbers. He looks so, like,
he's
such
changed. I feel like we're breaking up because he's changed.
It's not his fault. it's Musgrave. There've been so many bad coordinator and head coach hires in this league in, like, the last 2 or 3 years. It is astounding. Like,
that
the
money
fact,
doesn't matter. The like, fact that Big Ten money would help.
The fact that Carl Durrell, Bill Musgrave, and John Donovan are all, like, doing offensive things
significantly employed in this conference
is insane. It's absolutely insane that these hires were made. Like, okay, maybe there's some budgetary issues in this league, and I get it, but you didn't have to hire those guys. You could have hired, like, the wide receivers coach for Oklahoma. You could have hired, like, the running backs coach for Alabama. You didn't need to hire Bill Musgrave, Cal. That didn't need to happen. And you're reaping the rewards now.
I feel like they tried, like, with Bo Baldwin, remember? Like, he's,
yeah,
like,
they were doing something different. And then they're like, no, let's not do anything different. Let's do, like, man ball from 1995. and so Garber sucks now. Their rushing attack sucks. And Washington State, you know, Jaden Delora looked fine. They ran the ball pretty well. But they weren't really doing anything great themselves offensively. It was more just the case that Cal was absolutely and completely inept. And they won. Washington State won 21-6 on the road.
Jaden Delora coming back, I think, definitely was a nice spark for Washington State. But like you said, Justin Wilcox said, which he just seems to be, I mean, this has got to be his last season unless things can significantly turn around. We didn't really do much of anything all that well. That's on me. That's what he said. Cal blocked a punt in this one, but it ended up turning into a Washington State first down. So that sort of, like, tells you how this is going, right? Like,
right.
He did the Calvin Jackson Jr. catch, though. I think it was the number one player. It was one of them, the Sports Center top plays. That was, so we'll get to, like, Drake London's stuff. His was ranked higher, and I could see why. Like, he reached up and did a complete 360 when he caught this ball and tapped down. Of course, the Pac-12 refs said, it's an incomplete pass. And then if the reviewer like, oh, no, he caught
that. Oh, yeah. That was a freaky catch.
That was...
We actually didn't talk about Drake London at all because we already recapped that game.
Oh, we did? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Drake London was freaky good in that game. He's... He was basically the only reason USC was scoring points for like a long stretch of it.
Is he like the best player of the Pac-12? Like,
it's ridiculous. He should be illegal. It's not fair. There was that one series early on where it was just like, oh, they're going to throw it to London again. Oh, and he's going to make a ridiculous catch. Oh, there it is.
He did. They threw it up to him, and he made that ridiculous like Moss catch over somebody. And then
the one-hander in the end zone.
And I think they tried to run a play or something. He's like yelling, like, throw me the damn ball. Like, he was definitely Keyshawn Johnson over there. So the next time they just throw it up, and he said afterwards, he was like, yeah, he kind of laughed. He goes, because I didn't think I could get it. He threw his hand up, and it just kind of stuck on it. And he was like laughing to himself, like didn't realize he could have caught that ball, and he did. So he had two of like the best catches of the week in like a minute.
This is the best way to treat Washington State, Cal. Talk a little bit more about USC.
Well, I totally forgot we didn't mention Drake London, which it's just sort of like he's like a constant.
Yeah, you know? he's the only like elite part of this league.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that was disappointing effort from Cal. I don't know where you go from here. And I don't know, maybe Washington State has some life. They need Jaden Delora for sure. But even then, I think it's a coin flip if they're have a decent game or not. Okay, let's go. Next up, we have our number 8 team.
Washington Huskies.
And get this. This may be a little controversial. They were taking on our number 1 team.
Oregon State Beavers.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Has that ever happened? They've definitely spent more time at 12 than 1, but have they been 1 before? Have we had it? Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't think so either.
I think this is the first time ever.
And this was Dave sort of wanted a different one, and I'm like,
no, it was. It could have gone back and forth. It could have gone one or the other. It was either. Well, you'll understand. Oregon State, big home win over Washington. This one was won on a last second field goal. What do you think of the end game here?
Well, I mean, Oregon State was dominating the game, and then like Washington comes back, and it's cool that Oregon State was able to come back, but the way Washington handled this, I would say extremely poor.
Okay.
Would that be fair?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, so the final, so basically the sequence was, Washington had, the ball after Oregon State came back again to go back, into a tie game 24-24. And then Washington gets the ball and they go for it on 4th and 1 on their own 46, right? With about, what was it, 3 minutes to go?
So it was a 4th and 1. Yeah, I think there was 3 minutes left, but they did. The problem I had was the quarterback sneak.
Okay.
It looked like a full yard.
Uh huh.
And your quarterback's like not 6 feet tall.
Yeah. So I don't hate quarterbacks.
Which is half a yard.
I don't hate quarterback sneaks.
Twice a yard.
I don't hate quarterback sneaks on 4th and 1. I don't hate it. I love it. I think it's the only way to go. It was maybe a little bit long, maybe a little bit. But they should be able to get a yard on a quarterback sneak. You should be able to. They weren't able to. I think it's a lot of backseat quarterbacking or whatever. I didn't hate what Washington did. And then Jonathan Smith was getting some criticism as well for how he managed the very end of the game to play for a field goal.
I don't have an issue with that.
I loved that.
Yeah.
I thought that was perfect because how many times have we seen now with a final minute to go, a team drive the field and win?
Yeah.
No, just you play for that field goal and play for it with time expiring. And then whatever, you go to overtime in your home stadium. That's fine. Whatever. Who cares? So I liked the way he played it. I didn't hate the way Washington played it. I think that was just kind of some after the fact criticism. Long story short though, Oregon State was the better team and they should have won this game.
Yeah, they like, probably should have dominated it.
They probably should have won it by more. They ran the ball really, really well. The one thing was Chance Nolan really couldn't get anything going in the passing game. Washington had him blanketed. He wasn't as sharp as he was in the previous game. Might've been a little bit of a hangover effect. But they ran the ball really well. B.J. Baylor was exceptional. And Washington, you know, I didn't think they played poorly. Certainly in the first half, maybe. But in the second half, you got some things going a little bit more. Dylan Morris is just... I don't even want to blame Dylan Morris. John Donovan's just a terrible offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And that's really the long and the short of it.
Sean McGrew is good.
We like Sean McGrew.
He didn't play like the first two games.
Yeah.
That didn't go well.
No.
So maybe play him some more.
Yeah, play him some more. Yeah.
I remember covering him. It was Bosco, I believe, right? He was a little like, but you were covering, he's like 5'6" or something. Uh-huh. It's crazy. Yeah. Well, Washington, I don't know, Washington. Like, but that Washington could have won this game, you know, and then it would be a whole different story. But I think the,
I mean, if they convert that 4th-and-1, they probably do win this game.
The deserved team, I think, won this one. It maybe was a little crazier than you would have liked. We got this right too. They covered the spread, which was cool.
Yeah.
It was a 2.5 point. Oregon State was favored by 2.5. Won by 3. That would have been a bad one, like if it was like 3.5.
Oh yeah.
Which actually this week is, so that's gonna be a weird one. But yeah. Props to Oregon State winning their last 4 games, looking like not just a competent team, but a fun team to watch. You know, you've seen like the fruits of Jonathan Smith's labor kind of come together. And yes, they could still crash and burn, but they beat Oregon last year. They're on a great run so far this year after that clunker. And if they had Nolan start the first game,
they're probably 5-0 and ranked in the top 15 right now.
I know. Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Our number 7 team.
Utah Utes.
They were on a bye. Number 6 team, we already talked about, USC. Our number 5 team, they've dropped a little bit.
UCLA Bruins.
And they were taking on our now number 2 team.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
All right, the big takeaway from this game, Arizona State won 42-23, is that Arizona State probably should have won by more. They dominated the game. It was close at halftime, basically because Dorian Thompson-Robinson played probably the best first half he's played, at least this year, but maybe ever. He was really good in the first half, which was why it was 24-20 and then 24-23 after
Okay.
ASU's kick returner guy, full on Leroy Jenkins. Like, just, I'm going to take it and I'm just going to go and we'll see what happens. He took a kickoff out of the end zone from the back of the end zone and got tackled at like the 10. And it's like, what's going on here? And then he muffed a punt that he attempted to field off the bounce. And UCLA recovered it to kick a field goal just before half. But, like, those were meaningful plays. There were so many stupid things that ASU did in this game. Like, I think they had 12 men on the field 3 different times. It was insane how, like, just disorganized they were and just still beating UCLA like a gong. But, like, without all those mistakes, without all those, like, kind of issues, they would have had 50-plus in this game. Yeah. And they would have won this by 4 touchdowns. Jaden Daniels... He was both really good, and UCLA's defense was really bad.
The secondary is pretty bad.
It's not even just the secondary. It's the coaching because, the secondary's bad. Your secondary's bad. How much cover 0 are you going to call with a bad secondary? There was one where he got a 65-yard touchdown on a wide receiver screen where it was cover 0, and UCLA's 2 defensive backs, one was supposed to get the screen guy, and the other one was supposed to eat the block. They both go to eat the block. And so the guy who catches the ball literally has no one covering him at all. And it's a screen. So it's a lateral pass, more or less. And then he just, these guys are both going to be blocked by the same wide receiver. Great. I'm just going to run to the end zone. Maybe do it at a light jog. Who knows? And it was just, found the stat. It was 4 straight drives where Arizona State had a play over 47 yards.
Whoa. That's insane.
And Jaden Daniels just... He was good, but he was also just like able to just sit back there and throw a moonshot downfield. And there was a guy wide open. UCLA had some injuries in the secondary on top of them, like even the starters being bad. They were then down their starters. There was a walk-on who played at safety for like the entire second half. So it was bad. But the defense was awful. The only way UCLA was going to win this is if they got into a shootout, right? How many points do you think UCLA scored in the second half? Considering they know it's going to be a shootout, right? Like they know they're really going to get after.
Like 24 or something,
right?
Like that.
Yeah, they scored 0, 0 points. And I thought the funniest part was when Chip Kelly lined up the team for a 47-yard field goal attempt, down by 9 in the third quarter with ASU already having scored 32 points. Okay, ASU, let's recap. They're scoring every single time that they don't trip over their own dicks. Like, they are scoring at will. And you're going to line up to go down six in the third quarter. Yeah, what are we playing for here? Like, what are you doing? Terrible. Terrible decision. And then in the second half, so all game, UCLA was unable to run the ball out of conventional setups. Like, the only person who was able to run the ball was Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and that was off of scrambles. Or off this, like, one kind of gadget play where they had two offensive linemen, the rest were split out wide, and he just ran through the middle. Unable to run the ball, particularly out of, like, obvious run formations, right? So tight, compressed sets, can't run the ball. They're very bad. So what does he do in the second half? Ton of compressed sets. Ton of them. And ASU just continuously shuts him down the entire second half. So, like, ASU looked really good. I don't want to take anything away from ASU. This was one of the most poorly coached games I can remember from UCLA. And keep in mind, I watched the Carl Durrell era. I watched the Rick Neuheisel era. And I watched latter stage Jim Mora era. I am familiar with very bad coaching. And this was so bad. Dorian Thompson-Robinson's getting some blame in the second half because there was one two-play sequence near the goal line where the second time he missed the read to hand off. But throw that out. They're, again, doing compressed formations. I wouldn't hand the ball off either if I'm, like, at all aware of how they've done in those situations.
Sure.
If I'm Dorian Thompson-Robinson and I've got 96 yards on the ground, yeah, I'm going to hold on to the ball and see if I can make something happen. Horrible game for UCLA. Terrible. ASU, though, I think they looked really good, and I think their defense looks pretty good. I would put an asterisk next to the offensive performance
because of the UCLA.
Because UCLA's defensive staff clearly had no idea how to deal with a lack of talent in their own secondary.
I think for Jaden Daniels, we're waiting to see like a breakout performance against a good team or a decent team, and maybe you're not going to have that many opportunities in the Pac-12.
It's just UCLA's secondary was making it so easy for him. I think it was a really good game. I don't want to sit here taking a lot away from ASU. I think they played really well. I just think UCLA helped them by coaching like they were, their heads were in a bag.
And I feel like the UCLA defense was trying to be really aggressive, and Daniels handled it really well in, you know, big plays, a ton of big plays, like you mentioned. Also stopping UCLA's run game. UCLA couldn't run the football. That's a formula for success. But, Arizona State ran the ball well. Daniels played great. They had a lot fewer penalties. So I think all those are positive things. So we'll see how they go from here. But, kudos to ASU, and they put it together.
They did.
Just beat the crap out of UCLA, who was a favorite in the game. Okay, we got one last one.
We picked that one wrong, by the way.
Yeah, we both got that one wrong. Let's just, from week to week, nothing makes sense, so it's good. I think I just have to come up with new ways to pick things. Cause
hey, you're only five games under 500.
I know, it's pretty bad.
I'm only one game under 500.
Not bad. Let's see, we got
Oregon Ducks.
They are a number three team, and they were taking on, and I should have put this in the other order, our number four team.
Stanford Cardinal.
Well, we could switch three or four just because the way the game went, but I think overall resume, you might still go with.
Yeah, I still think Oregon's a better team.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Okay. Stanford won in overtime, 31-24. Oregon looked really, really, really bad offensively in this game. Anthony Brown miss and throws. He threw one of the worst picks I've ever seen in my life. Tried to throw it again later on. Was missing reads. There was one play near the goal line. I saw this on Twitter after the fact, just a little analysis of it, where he keeps where it should have been a hand or it should have been a pitch out for an easy walk-in touchdown, and he keeps. And it didn't even look like it was blocked with that option. Like, it didn't look like he had even an option to keep, and yet he did anyway. He was really, really bad. They might have to make a change at quarterback. I don't know if that's even going to be legitimate. I don't know how good Thompson is right now, but he was terrible. CJ Verdell went down at one point, so Travis Dye was getting a lot of carries, a lot more than he usually does. I've always liked Travis Dye. I don't know why he...
Verdell, I think it was third quarter he went down or something.
Yeah, I've always liked Travis Dye. He had a near fumble, but He always looks pretty good to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've never really understood the distribution there. But yeah, offensively, really struggled because of essentially poor quarterbacking. And then Stanford, you know, Tanner McKee looked okay. Looked pretty good. I would say in the first half, it actually looked like a bit of a vintage Stanford performance where it was just like kind of high efficiency and also just kind of holding on to the ball for a long time when they had it, and just kind of slowly working their way downfield. But it was, you know, a little bit of vintage Stanford. I was doing a long joke thread on Twitter about basically all these 2011 Stanford players showing up and playing. But really it was about kind of forcing mistakes from Oregon and then, you know, semi sort of taking advantage of them, just kind of over and over again. And then honestly, like they had a 4th-and-1 at the Oregon 45 when it was 10-0 Stanford. I felt like if they had converted that at that moment, they were going to go up by 3 scores on that drive. And it was not going to be super pretty.
Yeah.
They didn't. Tanner McKee did not get, it was really, really awful looking sneak. It was like a terrible sneak. But he didn't get the yard. And then Oregon went back and scored a touchdown. From then on, it was more of an evenly played game. But yeah, Stanford pulled it out and looked a little bit more like the annoying Stanford that we have come to know and love.
No Joe Moorhead in this one. So apparently some sort of non-COVID-related issue, and he had surgery. So hopefully it's one of those things where you felt like pick like 10 factors and you switch one of them and Oregon wins the game. You know, like just having an untimed down at the end.
Having different referees, maybe that
different
changes.
Referees might have helped.
Oregon fans are screaming at me for not mentioning the reffing on the final drive right now. They're screaming.
I mean, I think there were some legit calls. But there was also like the holding call didn't look like, you know, the one that extended the game and made it happen. But
well, fundamentally, you let a team convert a 2nd-and-19 with 1:44 to go from their own, 4-yard line. You don't. You had control of that. You could have controlled that play.
And you know you play in the Pac-12, right? So also the broadcast quality was very terrible on this one. So like ESPN apologized. Like about
the broadcast quality, but also like the actual announcers were terrible too.
Yeah,
it was Rod Gilmore and whoever. They were bad.
There you go. Yeah. So there was a lot. This felt like everything just sort of lined up and just was against.
Oh my
Oregon.
God! And Bryson Tremaine's foot injury. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Oh my God! And that was like the one thing they showed in high def the entire game. It's like I want that image excised from my brain. Like. Yeah. Literally do brain surgery and cut that one out.
Here's the deal. Anthony Brown and I, you know, I think I was listening to Pete Thamel and he was talking about, you know, which is weird. Urban Meyer was just raving about Anthony Brown, how great he was going to be. And I sort of was like, you know what? I just have a feeling he's going to have a huge year. He's going to be great. And he does not look good at all.
No.
And this is the overall thing. And I think someone with like 4 followers was tweeting me about my Stanford pick and stuff. It's calling them butt, and that's been a thing. Stanford, great win, obviously. A couple great wins so far. A couple bad losses, but it's Stanford butt. The whole conference could seriously be butt. We know for sure at least 2 teams are terrible and potentially more. I don't know if anyone's really good. Oregon still could be the class of the conference. Maybe it's Arizona State. Maybe it's Oregon State. I don't know. It's hard to say, but like, I don't think you're like, well, Stanford beat Oregon. They're a great team. Like, I don't think so. I don't think that they can have some good moments and bad moments, and we've seen that in the Pac-12. And if you just look at the quarterback play, like the preseason all Pac-12 quarterback was Keaton Slovis, who everyone wants his backup to play. Like, that's supposed to be the best quarterback in the conference. I don't know. Like, who's the best quarterback in the conference right now? Like, is there like a clear, like, oh, that guy's great? Like, I don't think we got one.
No, I don't think so. I think you've got to say Dorian Thompson-Robinson's having a good year. Jaden Daniels hasn't had a good statistical year, but I would say he's one of the better ones. I don't know, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no like, oh God, that guy's amazing.
There's nothing really great.
All right. Well, We got limited time.
I do want to mention one thing.
Oh, go ahead.
Mario Cristobal continues to be a very bad game manager.
I would say David Shaw wasn't a great game manager in this one either.
No, but Mario Cristobal called a timeout to help Stanford on their final drive to score. Like, that's the only way of reading that one, where it was like, I think it was like 41 seconds to go. And it was first and 10 at the Oregon 45 after they had just completed the ball. I think it was in the middle of the field. Like, force Stanford to take a timeout or force them to hurry up. Don't do that.
It just did them a solid. That's all.
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and preview week 6.
He also called a pass play on second down to, like...
Will you think about this over the break?
Yeah, like when Oregon had the ball and they just had to ice the game. Like,
David Shaw did that.
No, Mario Cristobal.
Oh, okay.
Cristobal's worse. David Shaw's a terrible game manager, and Cristobal is somehow worse.
Dave's on this one. Okay.
Sorry, Hithloday.
Sorry about that, Hithloday. All right, we got to do our week 6. We got... weekday games again. So only 4 games this week. We'll go through them quick and get the questions. First up, we got
Stanford Cardinal
on the road at
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Okay, this one's on at 7:30 on Friday on ESPN. Stanford traveling to number 22 Arizona State. ASU is a 13-point favorite. What about this league makes you think anybody should be favored by double digits? Like, at all, in any game? Give me Stanford. That's way too many points.
My gut says, take Stanford. You got two guys that slow the game down.
ASU just... Okay, so, again, I'm making this point just because I think it's valid for, like, understanding the dynamics of this conference. ASU won by 19, should have won by more, but so much of that was due to UCLA's awful coaching. Like, terrible coaching. Like, if they had just played...
Stanford.
But if they just played 8-man coverage the entire game, they would have had a chance in the game. It was so bad what they were trying to do to ASU. So I guess my point is, ASU's good. They're maybe one of the best teams in the league. Are they 13 points better than Stanford at home? No.
I say they are. I'm gonna go with it.
All right, baby.
I can't... I got to go against my gut, because my gut has been...
Remember who coaches awful. ASU.
We had Cristobal Shaw, now we got Herm Shaw. All right, we'll see what happens there. We picked that one differently. Next up, we've got the
Oregon State Beavers.
And there was even talk about game day being here at
Washington State Cougars.
I guess they tweeted that or something, but because they have the Washington State flag that's been going.
Yeah.
You're looking for an excuse to do it, but you got to do it early in the season before the Pac-12 loses a whole bunch of games.
This is on at 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 network. Oregon State traveling to Washington State. Oregon State is a 3.5-point road favorite over Washington State. Oregon State's just better. I think Washington State, they looked sharper against Cal, but some of that was just due to Cal's own ineptitude. So I'll take Oregon State as the minor key road favorite. I think they cover the 3.5, win by a touchdown.
I'm going to agree with you there. I was hoping you would look at that 15-point win for Wazoo and go, Jane Delore's back.
Cal's just
home.
No, Cal's just terrible.
Cal is pretty awful. I like Oregon State. Over the years, we've been pretty good at picking them. They've been good at covering the spread. I look at our chart, and I'm like, I pick OSU a lot, and it's always highlighted in bold because they win a lot, or they cover the spread a lot. So I'll agree with you on that one. All right. Another big one in the conference. We got
Utah Utes.
Coming off a bye week. Heading to a place that they've had some trouble playing.
USC Trojans.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that even good Utah teams have really, really struggled playing at USC. And this is not a good Utah team,
yeah.
I would say.
I'd say good.
Good-ish, but they've lost the last two times they've gone to the Coliseum. 2 years ago, or 4 years ago, it was only by one. That was the 28-27 game.
Yeah.
But before that, it was 18.
And that was the backup third-string quarterback.
Yeah.
For USC.
Yeah.
Utah plays a lot of man
That's not.
And it didn't work when USC had like three awesome receivers, but now they have one awesome receiver. Maybe that'll work because you can like throw three of your men over on the one and see what happens the rest.
Anyway, 5 p.m. on Fox, Utah traveling to USC. USC is a 3-point favorite. Like, I want to believe in Utah here, but I think Utah's not very good. I don't think USC is very good, but like all things being equal, the Coliseum's been a tough place for Utah to get wins. So I'll take USC. I don't feel great about it.
I'm going to do the same. Don't usually like picking USC. They covered last week. I kind of think they're going to cover this week. Now, the options for me are that USC, you know, wins. Even if they win by 6 or something or 4, you cover the spread. But I think there's a significant chance USC gets blown out like they've got blown out at home the last couple of games to Oregon State and Stanford. So, but I'll take SC as well. Probably should go against my gut, but I will not there. And then the last game we have to pick.
UCLA Bruins.
On the road against another team coming off a bye week.
Arizona Wildcats.
7:30 on ESPN, UCLA at Arizona. Zero doubt in my mind, take Arizona plus 16.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd go UCLA. I'm going to take Arizona as well.
I think there's a bare chance Arizona wins this football game.
Wow.
So Arizona's had a bye week to kind of get right, figure some things out with Jordan McLeod. UCLA is coming off of a big loss to ASU. They're now down a game in the, you know, Pac-12 race. They're probably thinking, what the hell's going on now? Because we're 3-2, and we were thinking we were going to be contenders this year. They have basically no healthy safeties. Not that Arizona's built to take advantage of that, but they will have had a full week to prepare for this one, a full extra week to prepare for this one. So at the very least, I think they cover.
Yeah. All right. So those are our picks against the spread. Only 4 games this week, one on a Friday. So you have the whole day on Saturday to kind of enjoy your college football. You got a game at 1, you got a game at 5, and a game at 7:30. So you don't have to watch 3 at one time. So that's kind of nice. Okay, let's go on to questions. We got a first one. It's a voicemail. This is pretty darn good.
Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. Well, well, well. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul and faith. I was around when Cristobal had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure Joe Moorhead could not even call his game. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh yeah. What's been puzzling you is the nature of my game. Who am I, boys? Keep it mediocre.
Pretty freaking good.
That's so good.
If we could send gift cards to state penitentiaries, we would send him one. You know?
The Zodiac Killer does indeed deserve a $100 jockey gift card after that one.
He could trade it for cigarettes or whatever.
Yeah. Send in your how do we send mail to the jail? Let us know. That was really good.
I got about a half an hour, so we got a lot of questions.
We got to roll through them.
We'll rapid fire these.
So, all right. Okay. So is it
Juan Noel? Or,
is it Jonathan State of Noel? LA? Did we do State of LA last time? We must have. Yeah.
To my fellow.
All right. So Juan Noel, to my fellow jockey whores, I get that you all want to win that gift card, but you're giving it way too much goddamned effort. What's it about this podcast that says try hard to you? A minimum effort podcast with minimum effort listeners does not want to hear anything with actual aspirations behind it. Keep it short, make us laugh, and cross your fingers because Dave and Ryan certainly aren't going to pick a winner based on any known rhyme or reason. But now having said that, here's the thing. This jockey stuff is awesome. I bought underwear and 2 pairs of sleeping shorts with the card I won a few weeks ago, and I love it all. I will even be buying more with my actual very own money. So to the corporate rep mandated by jockey to listen to this shit show every week, it's working. Your grand plan to move product by sponsoring a mediocre podcast of an even more mediocre conference was somehow effective. Unbelievable. God bless America. Go Utes and long live Aaron Lowe and Ty Jordan. Juan Noel. Beautiful email.
That's an awesome one, Juan. Yeah, and thanks to Jockey for that. Let's see. This one, we have a text message, and it starts off, so am I alone in thinking that what's wrong with the Pac-12 isn't Larry Scott or Pat Hayden or even regional demographic shifts, but actually David Shaw? The bad officiating is the result of Stanford's post-up-and-hold'em offense. For the sport in their boring style of play, and they're personally responsible for at least one bad win and bad loss every season. Stanford is a cancer, gentlemen. We can let Clay off the hook. And he said, look at it another way. Stanford football is just the Stanford band and uniforms and 50% more smug.
Compelling argument.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. This is from Phil. I can't take this conference anymore. Hello, Ryan and David. I am a lifetime Pac-12 fan. I grew up a USC fan and now attend Washington State, but love the Pac-12 as a whole. However, I just finished watching this Oregon versus Stanford game, and after all these years, I don't know how much more of this conference I can take. Every single one of these damn teams seem to have zero discipline, can't tackle, are one-dimensional, and all choke when they're a highly ranked team. All the coaches seem to not understand clock management and all tend to have mental blocks when they need to run the ball. Not only that, these refs are so inconsistent, and it's like the conference doesn't want me to watch anyways, as it seems like 75% of the time they play on the Pac-12 network. Like, who has the Pac-12 network? It would be one thing if everyone beat their out-of-conference opponents and then beat each other up, but we have teams like Arizona losing to 0-3 FCS schools and then almost beating the top Pac-12 team. This seems to happen year in and year out. I don't know, guys. Is it time to root for the Mountain West? Is it time to transfer and take my agricultural studies to Fresno State? The hurt has gone on for too long now. Anyway, sorry for the long email and just want to get your guys' thoughts. Any words to ease my frustrations would be much appreciated. Fight on and go Cougs for now. Phil. It's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're complaining about, Phil. This is why we love this stupid conference, because it's very niche. It's immensely frustrating, and it has no significance outside of a very tiny footprint.
Yes. Very true. I mean, it's well stated, but like, yeah, this is kind of why we're here.
This is the ball game, baby. Yeah. Two playoff appearances in the playoff era. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
This one is a text message. Anantis excrementum?
Excrementum.
Excrementum. Oh, I'm sorry. Excrementum. And that means, I believe, like duck feces or something like
duck
that.
Shit.
Duck
shit. All right.
So I think that was very well put. So that was, I guess, maybe a little, you know, towards Hitler Day, maybe just a little sort of like, hey, Hitler Day, I can send Latin shit too. And by the way, your team sucks.
That's exactly right.
I think that's what they were doing.
This is from Alfred Boomslang. Give Carl Durrell credit. Champions, let's give credit where credit is due. Carl Durrell knows who his best player is and wants to showcase him, pumping up his draft stock. Punter Josh Watts is legit. Sco Buffs, I guess.
He might set a record for attempts.
Yes, yes. His leg is going to fall off this
Those
year.
24 straight yeah. possessions of not scoring a point, like, he was busy. And most of the other time he was busy, too. John Donovan Slander from our boy Eric. The conference has sadly already lost a notable Rose Bowl winning coach this season, so we need to stop with the weekly disparaging of the fine work of John Donovan. has been doing in Seattle to score 7 points against the team that previously won the 2001 NCAA Division I National Championship Tournament, despite the handicap of starting a quarterback who doesn't go by Jake, is an accomplishment that deserves a lifetime extension. Eric, P.S., reminder to all the Wildcat and Bruins that this is fish and chip week. Fish and chip.
Fish and chip, baby.
You don't seem big on the fish and chip.
Like as the food or as like
no just like when it's mentioned that, like I think it's funny
yeah I like it
I could see your face sometimes when you're like indifference what to be fair there's a lot of indifference
I think puns are bad. Okay. I think they're the lowest form of humor.
Okay.
And now I'm not above using them at times, but fish and chip, you know, it's fine.
Okay.
I get it. I understand the cleverness, the you know, that whole thing.
Have you watched Wreck-It Ralph yet?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
This is from Nick Ravello. Coaching changes. Given that Dave has come out publicly and said Chip Kelly needs to be fired, is this the right year for UCLA to be looking for a new coach? The factors that would have to go into that decision, as I see it, are as follows. 1, who's available and who is a reasonable reality? I know a lot of my friends in our fan base, like all fan bases, like to throw out these huge names and believe we can get anyone. Simply not the case. 2, how much money are they willing to spend after this failed? And yes, I'm willing to call it a failed hire. 3, since essentially Aikman forced this hire, will he be involved again? I don't blame him. I think you had to do it at the time. 4, this is the one that is overlooked. They are hiring a coach across town, and no matter who you hire, you're not going to win that press conference because the national and local media is going to fawn over whoever gets hired across town, which is ridiculous because, Ryan, if you're being honest with yourself, the scale of attention that is placed on that football team is kind of ridiculous. Since the 70s, what have they really done? The era with Carroll, and that's pretty much it. I agree with Ryan. USC does not have to be good for the Pac-12 to be relevant, but it does have to be competent, and scheduling games at 7:30 on the Pac-12 network is about as stupid as UCLA playing a passive defense on Saturday night and not having corners up on receivers. Hey, let's play 10 yards off the ball. As a former defensive player, I wanted to throw up. You could tell what was coming from the cheap seats. Sorry for a little bit of a rant here. Anyway, I wanted to get your thoughts on a coaching change at both schools in the same year. By the way, the last time that happened, the ketchup and the mustard got J-Rob, and blue and gold got Terry Donahue. That was pretty sweet. Nick, I love it. I love your use of periods. They were...
missing?
No, they were there. Maybe too many of them. Okay, so taking this as it comes, yes, I do think Chip Kelly needs to be let go at the end of the year. You know, I did the look ahead, and even if UCLA finishes 8-4, Chip Kelly through 4 years will have a lower winning percentage than Slick Rick Neuheisel.
Dun dun dun.
And I think that's the determining factor. If you are under the Neuheisel line after 4 years, you just need to be fired. In fact, that should be built as a clause into any future UCLA head coach. If after 4 years you fall under the Rick Neuheisel line, you're done, and you have to give up your buyout. Like, you can't actually contest that at all. But yeah, no, I think it's done. They couldn't. They really needed to win that ASU game because that would have put them at 4-1, heading into some soft parts of the schedule. Because now they're going to get, you know, they might beat Arizona, they might beat Colorado, they probably lose to Oregon, probably lose on the road to Washington. You're looking at, again, like another year, it's like 6-6, 7-5, which isn't great. So yeah. And then the rest of it, I don't know. You don't need to sit there. I think UCLA has to really do some thinking about what they want to be, who they want to be, what kind of program they want to have. Just hiring like the third best coach who's available is not the way to go. I think what you saw with this, and I think it compares well with Mick Cronin, but what you saw with the Chip Kelly hire is a guy, and I think this is obvious now, like it's obvious in that ASU game, not consumed with winning, much more consumed with being creative, creating, you know, interesting offense or whatever, and not all consumed with winning. Because if you were all consumed with winning and you saw what was happening in that first half, you would have gone entirely to spread formations in the second half. But no, he wants to show, oh, I can be creative. I can have wide receivers playing tight end positions and trying to do tight end blocking. And I just don't think he's driven in that way. So getting somebody who has, you know, has a little bit of drive, they want to, you know, they're driven in some way. Like Mick Cronin, he's got a short man's complex. He's always going to be driven.
nice.
But getting somebody who's got a little bit of drive, and I think the context doesn't matter. I mean, USC, yeah, they're going to go out there and try to get the biggest name they can find. And I think UCLA needs to approach it a different way this year.
I think USC hasn't gone out and tried to get the biggest name they could find before. They're going to probably try to do that now. And UCLA might not because...
They've tried. They've just failed.
No. They no desire to. Like, they chip, like hiring Clay Helton, there was no desire to get a big name. Like,
well, no. With Clay Helton, it was a very different thing. But I'm talking like the Pete Carroll. Like, when they were going after Pete Carroll, he was like the fifth or sixth choice.
Yeah, but there wasn't like, you know, they were like Mike Riley choices. They weren't like, you know, these, they didn't
you
go.
You throw yourself back to 2001. Mike Riley was like a hot name. He was going to be the Chargers coach, or he was the Chargers coach.
He was, yeah, that was short lived too. But I would say UCLA went out and got the big name, which yeah. you feel like, hey, this is what, by the way, you got to stop with the hate on Ricky Neuheisel because, you know,
Slicky Ricky.
You don't like people talking smack about Clay. Rick's my guy. Yeah, so we don't want that. He no gloves, man. He still won all those games. Better than Chip Kelly.
He won all those games, 42% of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
At a basketball school, that's a lot, you know? So
if you're playing baseball, 42% success rate's great.
At the plate. I love it. I think it's like, okay, you have two brothers. They're both married. They both get divorced. And they're both
Is this a riddle?
No, just like getting into relationships. Like, you got to do what's right for you. The brothers have different personalities. You don't have to go find the same, you know, caliber of girlfriend or wife the next time around as your brother. Like, you need to do fit, you know, what's the right fit for you. And the right fit for USC is going to be different than the right fit for UCLA, even though they're the same city. So I think you can't worry about what that's going on. Last time, that like, two good coaches got hired the last time this happened. So if it does happen, we'll see if it does again. Our buddy Chris in North Carolina, or maybe that's Northern California. I think he just says NC. I'm assuming North Carolina. Uh-huh. It's a witty subject line. That's what he says.
I like it.
I like that. Yeah. Very witty. Esteemed host, good news. I finally passed the Khan Academy course in writing shorter emails. My apologies for the long Buddhist monastery-themed missive. Like the UCLA defense, it was a lot of style and motion intended to cover up an overall lack of substance. Never have I felt so small as when Ryan damned it with the faint praise of, that got better. Horror of all horrors. It's apparently harder to be funny when UCLA wins. This is not something Bruin fans are familiar with. So, as we continue to roll our rocks up the hill, a few questions. After Chip Kelly is eventually let go, which Big 12 team will he take to the playoffs in 2027?
Texas Tech.
Well, I like it. Number two, what are the odds Lane Kiffin would be interested in succeeding Kelly? He seems almost alone among professional coaches to do things solely for the memes. Would there be anything more meme-worthy than bolting the SEC a second time, running away from Saban, and taking a job at UCLA simply to spite USC? Would he hold his press conferences at the tarmac at LAX?
I'm in favor. It would be hilarious.
That would be awesome. Hypothetical. If Colorado's offense was forced to play Georgia's defense for 60 minutes, who would win?
Every viewer. Every single viewer would win. We would all win. Everybody watching that game would win.
But the Georgia defense would score more points.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no question. So, all right. If it was just literally Colorado's offense, they get every single drive.
Every drive.
And every time, like, Georgia just gives it right back to them and they start again on the 25.
Yes.
Georgia wins that game 42-10. like probably 42-0.
Yeah, they're not scoring.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Many thanks for your important work, Chris from NC.
All right, this is from Brent. Hey, guys, can you rate the head coaches and game management? Wondering what you think of the chess match between Smith and Lake late in the game. A very optimistic Beaver fan. All right, so the worst, I think, Shaw, Cristobal.
Shaw's got the track record.
Like, Shaw and Cristobal are both pretty bad. Cristobal is now gacked like two or three big games away with bad game management. And then it's like varying degrees. Like certain guys can be bad. I think Jonathan Smith has a touch of conservative, but I thought he was doing maybe the best expected value play there, which is not allowing Washington another opportunity to score. So I think he's middle of the pack, maybe upper. Jimmy Lake seems not great.
Where do you put Herm?
Middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Occasionally conservative, but middle of the pack.
I mean, NFL conservative.
Chip Kelly, for all the, like, yes, he screws some things up, but he's still probably the best one on fourth down in the league in terms of just, like, knowing when to go.
Carl Durrell?
Carl's bad, but it's, again, middle of the pack.
I would say middle to bad.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's really great.
Whittingham.
Whittingham's okay. He's middle.
It's like, is it conservative stuff?
Pretty conservative, but like consistently so. He's not doing wild things. I think Jed Fish might turn out to be pretty good. He's a smart guy, and so I think he's going to actually, like, you know. But I think it's just right now you can't judge it because they're terrible.
Yeah, it's hard to judge terrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, this is from Hugh Janus.
Is it you?
Is this me or you?
I don't know. Who did the last one?
Oh. I don't know.
I think it's me.
You do it.
Okay. True or false from Hugh Janus. Hi, Ryan and Dave. It's your pal Hugh Janus here with a few true false questions for you fellas. Tough game to watch for us UCLA fans this past Saturday. I hope Dave's newfound belief in Chip Kelly has not been shaken. It's shaken. On to the questions. Michael Mothershed and his officiating crew are the absolute worst in the Pac-12.
True, no question about it.
True. Yeah. Two, Chip Kelly will...
And like legitimately, George, if you're listening, that crew needs to be changed or heavily coached up. They've been awful, long time awful, forever. So
yeah,
there you
go. Curious to get his thoughts on that after the season, too. Chip Kelly will be coaching UCLA again next season. True.
False.
I go true. Oregon State will win the Pac-12 North this season.
Mm.
I'm going to go true.
True.
They beat Oregon last year. Yeah. Four, you're both aware that all the Pac-12 schools have ice hockey teams and that ASU is the NCAA Division is NCAA Division I.
False.
False for sure. I know USC has like a club team or something.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Five, the shitty start times of many Pac-12 games will not be fixed in any way until there's a new TV deal in place.
The until screws me up because I don't think there will be a fix to the shitty start times. So I'm going to put that as a false.
I got to give it a partial truth. I don't think you're going to see like the 3 7:30 games or whatever, 2 7:30 games and an 8 p.m. game. Like, I think they got to spread it around a little bit. I think they'll
to an extent, but also that's the most valuable time slots for Pac-12 teams.
Yeah. But I mean, I just don't like having three at once of like half the games like all at once.
Yeah.
I think they'll try to fix that. Six, it's completely stupid that USC doesn't like to be called Southern Cal. I don't know if that's, I mean.
Yeah, that's the thing is this has two, there's an assumption in here, Hugh, which is that they don't like it. I think that's just a UCLA thing that USC doesn't like it. Maybe like somebody's friend didn't like being called Southern Cal, but I don't think they care.
They have a thing in like the press release, like it's not Southern Cal, but no one I know cares.
Oh, the institution actually says that?
They say that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, then true. This is completely stupid.
It's stupid, but I don't think anyone, like, people, I don't think people care, but they do something that they say.
Why don't they do, like, Cal LA for UCLA?
Cal LA.
There you go.
But Southern Cal is, like, if you're listening to someone in Alabama, like, talk about, like, yeah, you know, Southern Cal, like that. People talk about Southern Cal, like that's what everyone knew.
The reason they do that is because there's already a USC that's older in the South.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's why they call it Southern Cal.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think that's it, but they didn't even know they existed like back there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. The South Carolina people, go Cox! How cool of a
nickname. It's really good.
It's so good. Seven. David Wood's creepy beard scares his children.
False. And actually, when I trim it or shave it, they one time when I trimmed my beard, my then 3-year-old said, "You look like a monkey."
Nice.
And not in like a positive way. She was into monkeys at the time, but she was still like, "You don't look good."
Yeah, I would say false. The more you cover up his face, the better.
Yeah, way better. Way, way, way better.
Eight. Jasmine is the hottest Disney princess.
No, false. Nala.
Which one's Nala?
She's the tiger or the lion or whatever in The Lion King.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. Four, Nathan Bedford Forrest, the first Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, killed more than 30 men on his own during the Civil War, a record for American generals.
False?
I don't know. 10, Jonathan Smith may just be the best coach in the Pac-12.
True, and you can remove the equanimous, you know, pusillanimous language there. He just is the best coach in the Pac-12.
Instead of saying remove May, just say pusillanimous language.
Cowardly crap.
Okay, thanks as always for your humor, incredible insight, and riveting discussion of all things Pac-12. Go Bruins, FSC, love Hugh Janus.
This is from Dev Knoll. Welcome to the farm, Dave. Last week, Dave astutely chose Stanford to cover the spread. What he said was something like, something weird always happens late in games that keep Stanford in it, but if you really listen to what he's saying, behold the prowess of the team that felled the mighty Clay Helton-led Trojans and kept it close for a while with a sometimes dominant UCLA Bruins team. Thank you, Dave, for seeing the light. Ryan, I understand if you want to continue calling Stanford but you are welcome to join Dave and me on the other side anytime you like. Thanks to the podcast, guys. Your pal, Dev Knoll.
Thanks, Dev. Did I pick? I didn't know. I picked ASU this week. I didn't even pick Stanford.
I know.
Sorry. No, I think the whole conference is butt. So
you're never going to go back. Even if Stanford wins this league, you're just still going to be like, no, Stanford sucks.
I don't think Stanford sucks. They're definitely better than I thought. League and they're a subset of this.
Ryan's contention is that the league has fallen down to meet them in the land of ass.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And would you disagree with that?
Yeah, I don't think Stanford's butt.
No, I don't think they're butt anymore.
I think they're fine.
Yeah, they're a fine team. They're a decent team, which may be the best team in the Pac-12 because they're a decent team.
Yep.
Bruins and Wildcats from Bobby. Hi, Ryan and Dave. I have a couple things to go over here. One, I was going to give Dave a hard time for the Bruins losing to the Devils this weekend, but I realized that Dave is an expert at self-flagellation and has already done much more damage to himself than I could have ever done.
True.
Yeah.
Is this a true false?
I don't think it is, but we'll just do that. Two, Arizona. Arizona. Do they really want to be called that? Is planning a whiteout this weekend. What I think is funny about this is that they wore white in both of their home games thus far and are wearing blue to their whiteout Go figure. I didn't know that for that other part.
Neither did I.
That does make no sense, but it's Arizona football, so here we are. Three, can you please, 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 please play COVID canceled soundbite when, if Rolovich gets fired? Thanks, guys. Bobby. I already deleted it off the board because I don't want to do it anymore, but we could do one for you.
Yeah.
Good stuff there. Thanks, Bobby.
COVID canceled.
Yep.
All right. Just make sure you record that later on.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, but you just do it again.
Just splice it out.
Yeah. That just, yeah.
Little fucker. All right. Question for Pod. What needs to happen in the next 2 weeks so zero Pac-12 teams are ranked? Ooh. Okay, so who's ranked right now? ASU? Is that it? Is Oregon still ranked?
Oregon's 8 and ASU's 22.
Oh, okay. So next week, who does Oregon have next week? Oh, yeah. Losing to Cal at home will be more than enough, I think, to drop Oregon out of the rankings.
And then Arizona State, you know, can't beat by Stanford. The problem is Stanford will get ranked at that point.
Yeah, but Cal won't be ranked. Stanford could be ranked, but then Stanford would need to lose to Wazoo. And if Stanford loses to Wazoo, that's ball game.
Yeah. So there, I mean, plenty scenarios.
Yeah, I think there's some. There's definitely some live scenarios. Yeah, I don't think anybody would be ranked after that. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, we got substitutions from Hithloday.
That's not in Latin. Hithloday.
No.
What happened?
There was another text message in Latin. Duck shit.
Yeah. So it's sad. Hithloday must be feeling maybe not quite right.
Maybe not. I was reassured last week that you defended publisher's privilege for unsubstantiated revanchism as long as not too many people hear it, as the same thing is the premise of the product. But during the long explanation on journalism at 24/7, I had time to wonder if Keely Orr and Chris Osgood might like to sub in for you boys next week. You could really take that long-deserved vacation. Chris Osgood, where's he?
He works for Bro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he does the the detailed play breakdowns and stuff.
Nice.
It's very good.
So he would want Keely and Chris as opposed to us?
I think he's saying that we're not very good, which I agree with. And if somebody else would take this burden from me, I would be very pleased to relinquish it.
He doesn't seem to like us.
He loves us.
Well,
he sends us an email every
time. I think he loves us, but I don't think he likes us. Like,
yeah, it's sort of like the way you feel about like a disturbing family member.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to be around them, but like you still have a lot of care in your heart for them.
Mm.
I think that's the way Hithloday feels
Maybe
about
it is,
us.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel about Hithloday.
Yeah. For the last two seasons, Oregon has been using a planned rotation for almost every position at the offensive line. It's not situational, injury-based, or experimenting to find better play, but rather, every drive or every other drive, they swap in a different configuration, switching guys on and off the bench from the left to the right or between guard and tackle. It was six guys in 2020, but they've gotten up to eight different linemen in their regular rotation during this season. This kind of extensive planned rotation, positional cross-training is either crazy or genius. I'm not sure which. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before. Have you?
So this is interesting because UCLA has been doing, not to that extent, but they've been rotating offensive linemen regularly without injury a lot more than I was ever used to. Because my understanding for the longest time, like in the early 2000s, like when I was first like really following it, football in any real way, you played the same five guys. And until there was an injury, you played the same five guys and they played their exact same position no matter what the whole time. And with Chip Kelly at UCLA, I've noticed like there's a lot of guard rotation, and then there's even some center rotation, which seems crazy to me to want to rotate your centers because they're the ones who are like kind of calling the blocking schemes and figuring out, you know, what's going to happen up front.
And they get your quarterback the ball every single play.
Right.
You kind of want the same
guy consistency.
Doing that.
I've noticed it a little bit with UCLA, but not to the extent Oregon has. Are you? I guess the question is, are you sure it's not situational? Because with UCLA, there's some element of situational. I don't think it's entirely. I think they do just kind of rotate. But Antonio Maffi will often be in there on more profound like running series. But I don't know if it's – I think it's still pretty just regular rotations. But, yeah, I've noticed it a little bit more from several teams. But UCLA is the obvious example that I know of where they're doing more offensive line rotation. But it sounds like whatever Oregon's doing is much more extensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a little from USC. They were doing that early on where they had like a kind of a sixth and seventh guy they wanted to work in there in some series. But so maybe it's something that's happening a little bit more. But it seems like a lot from what Oregon's doing, which I haven't seen much of.
All right. This is a what is most likely Pac-12 North edition. Rank these from most to least likely to happen. All right, you ready?
No, but sure.
All right. Number one, the Beavers win 9+ games and Jonathan Smith wins Coach of the Year. 2, the Ducks win the national championship. 3, Washington State wins the Apple Cup, making them bowl eligible and keeping UW out of bowl games. Okay, so a situation where they are 6 wins and UW is at 5. 4, Stanford doesn't win another game this year. 5, Cal beats Stanford. All right, so lowest on this totem, I think, is Stanford doesn't win another game this year.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to win another game.
Second lowest, I think, is Oregon wins the national championship.
Fair, yep.
Third lowest, I would say, is Wazoo wins the Apple Cup, making them bowl eligible. And keeping UW out of bowl games.
Yeah, that's
just
a lot.
Because it's
that's
got a lot going on.
Sure, I would say yes.
Second is Cal beat Stanford. And top is most likely is Beavers win 9+ games and Jonathan Smith wins Coach of the Year.
I think that works. Okay. I like that. I like the way they rank that.
I think I would pick Oregon State to win 9+ games at this point.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see how they do this week. But yeah, that's...
Yeah, so Oregon State, just a quick glance ahead at their future schedule. Washington State this week, we both pick them to win. Utah at home, I think they win that. At Cal, really good chance to win that. At Colorado, good chance to win that. They could go 4-0 the next 4 weeks. And then, yes, it's Stanford, ASU, and Oregon, but 9 wins seems...
Yeah, I think it's...
really possible.
Last one's a voicemail we just got. I loaded it up here, and we'll play it for you.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I was wondering, you know, with the past kind of past few months for Utah football, the two deaths that they've had, and then kind of the rough season last year and this year, I was wondering, do you guys think with all that going on, it might be the end of Kyle Whittingham's time there? I'm not saying he should be fired, nor am I rooting for his time to end. I was just wondering, it seems like a lot of coaches that have a lot of kind of just negative events that happen like that or tough things to deal with, that's kind of what accelerates the end of their tenure. And I was wondering if you guys could see that happening with Kyle Whittingham. Thanks, guys.
I don't know if it would be related to this, frankly. I've heard for a while from people who like are close to the Utah program that they're not expecting him to be there too much longer and probably just retire at that point. I don't know if it would be related to this. I could see for certain guys, maybe, but I think also for other coaching types, they might see that as like, oh, I need to be around longer. And, you know, because I think some of these guys, and I think Whittingham's probably one of them, see themselves as sort of a paternal figure for a lot of these people on their team, a lot of the players on their team. And I think in that sort of situation where the team's in a little bit of crisis, it could kind of spark that a little bit more like, oh, okay, well, I need to help be here and stabilize things and, you know, that sort of role. And it kind of depends on the mentality, and I don't know Whittingham that well, but from everything I've read about him, that might be more of what's the, if this affected that decision-making at all, it might affect it that way. But I've heard for a while now that he's not expected to be there, I don't know, more than 3 or 4 years down the road.
Yeah, this is, and he did come out and say, no one's going to wear number 22 for as long as he's the coach there. It doesn't sound like someone that's only going to be the coach there for another half a year. I've heard the same sort of thing. Maybe something like this even makes him want to stay around longer. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's going to come to an end at some point, you know. But when will it end? It's just hard to say right now.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. Anything else, Dave?
I've got nothing else for you. I'm spent.
Yeah, me too. I got to go deliver some meals.
You got to go deliver some meals on
some wheels.
On some wheels.
But thanks for everyone for listening to our crappy little show. That is David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you enjoyed it, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.